Welcome to another deep dive. This time, we're taking a close look at the human peripheral nervous system. You know, that intricate network that bridges our brains to the outside world, letting us sense, react, and really experience everything around us.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
This network allows for a constant flow of information between our brains and the rest of our bodies.
It really is. We've got some university-level physiology notes to guide us, so we're in for a pretty deep dive on how our bodies turn the world into, well, electrical signals our brains can actually make sense of.
Yeah, it's a complex process, but fascinating to break down.
Think about it. How do we feel, like a gentle breeze or the warmth of the sun on our skin?
Those are great examples. It all boils down to a process called transduction.
Right, transduction. It's like our body's way of translating those external signals into a language our brain can understand. And to do this, we've got a whole army of specialized receptors all over our bodies.
Exactly. And each of these receptors is tuned to a specific type of input. Some respond to light, others to sound, others to pressure, and so on.
It's like having a team of specialized reporters, each covering a different beat, sending breaking news updates straight to the brain. You know how when you put on a watch in the morning, you feel it there on your wrist, but then after a while, you just stop noticing it?
Yeah, all the time.
That's receptor adaptation at work, right?
Exactly. Those touch receptors on your skin, they're called phasic receptors. They're quick to react when a new sensation appears, but then they quiet down if the sensation stays constant.
So they're like, okay, new watch, got it. No need to keep bugging the brain about it.
Exactly. It's super efficient. And what's fascinating is that understanding these different types of receptors, it can actually help us understand chronic pain.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, sometimes pain signals get stuck in the on position, even when there's no actual injury. It's like the body's alarm system is malfunctioning. But by knowing how receptors work, researchers are trying to develop more targeted pain management strategies.
That's really incredible. It's like rewiring the body's pain circuits. Okay, so we've got these receptors, they're sending signals, but what about the feeling of pain itself? You know how sometimes it's like a sharp, immediate ouch, and other times it's more of a dull, throbbing ache. Turns out there are actually different types of pain fibers responsible for those different sensations, right?
Yeah, that's right. We've got A-delta fibers. They're the fast lane for pain signals. They're myelinated, which means they're insulated for speed. So they send that sharp initial pain message straight to the brain, like, hey, danger, move your hand away from that hot
All
stove.
right, that makes sense. And then we have the C fibers.
Right? C fibers. They're slower. They're unmyelinated. They carry that the longer-lasting throbbing pain, like the kind you feel after a burn or a muscle strain. It's like they're reminding you, okay, you're hurt. Protect that area while it heals.
So both types of pain are essential for our survival, then.
Absolutely. The sharp pain makes us react quickly, to avoid further injury, while that lingering ache tells us to rest and protect the injured area. It's all part of the body's amazing self-preservation system.
Wow, I never thought of it that way. Okay, let's shift gears a bit now and talk about vision. Our eyes are like, well, they're like these amazing biological cameras capturing light and transforming it into the visual world we experience. So light enters through the pupil and then it gets focused onto the retina, right? By the cornea and lens.
It's actually pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. The cornea and lens, they work together to bend the light just the right amount so it lands precisely on the retina. And if they're not perfectly shaped, well, that's when we need glasses or contacts to help us see clearly.
Right, like our eyes have their own built-in lenses, and sometimes, they need a little fine-tuning. And speaking of amazing, did you know that that our visual processing takes up about 30% of our brain's capacity? That's a lot of brain power dedicated to seeing. Shows how complex and important vision is to us, right?
It really is. And just think about all the things we do with vision. Reading, recognizing faces, appreciating art, navigating our world. It's a constant stream of information our brains are processing every second.
Okay, so get this. There's actually a blind spot in each of our eyes. It's the spot where the optic nerve exits the eye. There are no photoreceptors there, so we literally can't see anything in that tiny little spot.
But here's the really cool part. Our brains are so smart that they fill in the missing information based on the surrounding of visual input. So we don't even notice it most of the time. Our brains are constantly making assumptions, filling in gaps, creating this seamless visual experience, even with those blind spots.
That's really incredible. Like our brains have their own like built-in Photoshop seamlessly editing our visual world. Okay, let's talk about hearing now. It all starts with those vibrations we call sound waves. They're kind of like ripples in a pond, spreading out from the source of the sound.
Perfect analogy.
So when those waves reach our ears, they're funneled into the ear canal and hit the eardrum, making it vibrate. Then those vibrations get passed along to, well, to the tiniest bones in our bodies, right? The malleus, the incus, and the stapes. They're all tucked away in the middle ear.
Those tiny bones play a huge role.
I know, right? And these little bones, they act like amplifiers, boosting those tiny vibrations from the eardrum. And get this, all three of those bones could fit on a penny. Amazing how such small structures play such a big part in our hearing.
It is amazing. But it's in the cochlea, this spiral-shaped structure in the inner ear,
yeah,
where things get really fascinating. Imagine it like a finely tuned musical instrument with different parts responding to different pitches.
Oh, I see. So like, how does that actually work?
Well, as those sound waves travel through the fluid in the cochlea, they cause tiny hair cells to bend. And this bending motion, it generates those electrical signals that our brain interprets as sound. It's like the cochlea is breaking down these complex sound waves into individual notes, letting us hear all the nuances of music and speech.
Wow. It's mind-blowing how something as simple as, you know, listening to music involves such an intricate process. But let's not forget about our other senses, the chemical senses, taste and smell. They're like the dynamic duo of sensory perception working together to create that complex experience of flavor.
Absolutely. They're intertwined in ways we're still learning about.
We have those five basic tastes, right? Sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and umami, that savory, meaty flavor.
Right. Each taste is triggered by specific molecules interacting with receptors on our tongues.
Okay, so how does that work with artificial sweeteners? I mean, they taste sweet, but they don't have any calories, right?
That's a great question. Artificial sweeteners are designed to trick our taste receptors. They bind to those sweet receptors on our tongues, sending a sweet signal to the brain, even though they're not actually providing any energy.
It's like a taste bud hack. Our brains are like, woo, sugar. But our bodies are like, wait a minute, where are the calories?
Exactly. And that's why artificial sweeteners can sometimes have those unexpected effects on our metabolism and cravings.
So it's not just about the taste itself, but about the whole physiological response that goes along with it. That's pretty fascinating. But okay, so we've seen how our senses pick up all this information from the world. What about the systems that control our internal responses?
Ah, yes, the autonomic nervous system. It's the behind-the-scenes manager of our bodies controlling all those vital functions we don't consciously think about.
Right, like breathing, digestion, heart rate, it's all happening automatically thanks to the autonomic nervous system. And it's divided into two branches, right? The sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems.
Exactly. You've probably heard in the fight or flight response, right?
Yeah.
That's the sympathetic nervous system in action.
Right. It's like our body's ancient alarm system getting us ready to either face a threat or run away from danger.
Precisely. Your heart races, your breathing gets faster, muscles tense up, all thanks to that surge of adrenaline from the sympathetic nervous system.
It's like our bodies have this built-in superpower, you know, ready to unleash a burst of energy when we need it most. But what about when the danger's past? That's where the parasympathetic nervous system steps in to calm things down, right?
You got it. It's like hitting the reset button after a stressful event. The parasympathetic nervous system slows your heart rate, lowers your blood pressure, you know, bringing everything back into balance.
Okay, that makes sense. But I'm curious, are these systems ever both active at the same time, or do they just switch back and forth like a light switch?
That's a great question. And it kind of leads us into a deeper understanding of how these systems actually work together. So, let's unpack that a bit more in the next part of our deep dive. It's not really like an on-off switch. It's more like a dimmer switch, you know? Both systems are always active to some degree.
Wow.
It's the balance between them that kind of determines our overall state.
So like a constant tug of war with one side, you know, sometimes pulling a little harder than the other.
Exactly. And get this, even though they often have like opposing effects, they actually work together to fine-tune our bodily functions. Like take your heart rate, for example. The sympathetic system, it revs it up when you need that boost, while the parasympathetic system gently, you know, applies the brakes to keep things from going too crazy.
So it's not just about speeding up or slowing down. It's about finding that sweet spot, that perfect balance for whatever situation we're in.
Exactly. Now, remember how we talked about acetylcholine being the messenger at the neuromuscular junction telling muscles to contract? Well, acetylcholine is also involved in the autonomic nervous system. But here's where things get really interesting. It can have completely opposite effects depending on, you know, depending on which organ it's talking to.
Wait, so the same chemical messenger can have different effects? How does that even work?
It all comes down to the type of receptor it binds to. It's like having the same key that can open different doors, depending on the lock. In the heart, acetylcholine binding to certain receptors actually slows down the heart rate, while in other organs, it might actually stimulate activity.
So it's not just the messenger, but also the receiver that determines the ultimate effect. That's pretty amazing. But what tells these systems when to kick in? How do they know when we're stressed or when we need to just chill out?
Well, our brains are constantly monitoring our internal and external environment, picking up on cues like, changes in blood pressure, body temperature, even our emotional state. When these signals stray from their ideal range, that's when the autonomic nervous system steps in to kind of bring things back into balance.
So it's like our bodies have this incredible internal GPS constantly navigating us towards a state of equilibrium.
Exactly. Think about what happens when you exercise. As your muscles work harder, they send signals to your brain saying, hey, we need more oxygen here. And that's what triggers the sympathetic nervous system to, increase your heart rate and breathing, delivering that oxygen to your muscles.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about when we're not, physically exerting ourselves? Can our thoughts and emotions also trigger those autonomic responses?
Absolutely. Think about public speaking. Many people experience like a surge of anxiety before giving a presentation, right? Their heart races, their palms get sweaty, their breathing gets all shallow. These are all classic signs of the sympathetic nervous system kicking in, preparing the body to cope with that perceived stress, even though there's no physical danger.
It's like our bodies haven't quite caught up to the fact that we're not actually facing down a saber-toothed tiger when we give a presentation, but it definitely feels that way sometimes.
It's true. And this connection between our minds and bodies, it's incredibly powerful. In fact, techniques like deep breathing and meditation, they can actually help shift the balance towards the parasympathetic nervous system, promoting relaxation and reducing stress.
So we're not just at the mercy of these automatic responses. We can actually learn to influence them, take control of our internal state. That's pretty empowering.
It is. And it brings us to an important point. What happens when the sympathetic nervous system is like constantly activated, even when there's no real danger? This is what we call chronic stress, and it could have, some serious consequences for our health.
So like our bodies are stuck in fight or flight mode, even when there's nothing to fight or flee from.
Exactly. And over time, this chronic stress can lead to a whole host of problems: elevated blood pressure, weakened immune system, digestive issues, sleep disturbances, anxiety, depression, even accelerated aging.
Wow, that's a pretty long list. So it sounds like finding ways to manage stress is really crucial for our overall well-being. But how do we do that? I mean, we can't just eliminate stress from our lives completely, can we?
Of course not. Life is full of, challenges and stressors. But understanding how the autonomic nervous system works can give us valuable insights into how to manage stress more effectively by recognizing the signs of stress and consciously activating the parasympathetic nervous system. We can kind of regain control over our body's responses.
So it's not just about avoiding stress, but about equipping ourselves with the tools to manage it effectively.
Exactly. And those tools can be as simple as, taking a few deep breaths, going for a walk in nature, or spending time with loved ones. These activities can all help shift the balance towards that parasympathetic nervous system, promoting relaxation, restoring a sense of calm. And there are also, more focused practices like mindfulness, meditation, yoga that can help us train our minds and bodies to respond to stress in a healthier way.
So we've got this incredible internal system that's constantly working to keep us in balance. And by understanding how it works, we can actually learn to work with it rather than against it. That's a pretty amazing takeaway. But we've been talking a lot about the behind the scenes stuff. What about the part of the nervous system that allows us to actually move our bodies voluntarily, like
Yeah.
decide to do things?
Yes, the somatic nervous system. It's the command center for all our conscious movements, allowing us to interact with the world in a very deliberate way. Let's dive into that next.
Okay, so the somatic nervous system, it's what lets us, decide to do things like reach for a cup of coffee or go for a walk. But how does that actually work? How does a thought in my brain actually become a physical action?
It's like a chain of command. It starts in your brain in the motor cortex. That's where the idea for the movement comes from. And then that signal travels down your spinal cord, out through peripheral nerves, and ultimately reaches the specific muscles that you need to you know, to make that movement happen.
So it's like sending a text message straight from brain headquarters to muscle central.
Exactly.
Right. Bicep, time to flex. Legs, let's go for a walk.
Exactly. And the messenger delivering those instructions is the motor neuron. These are specialized nerve cells that have these long, slender axons that act like wires, carrying those electrical signals all the way from the spinal cord to the muscles.
Okay, so the message arrives at the muscle. But how does that actually make the muscle fibers contract? What's the magic ingredient?
Well, remember our friend acetylcholine? It's back in action. At the neuromuscular junction, that's the meeting point between the motor neuron and the muscle fiber. Acetylcholine acts like a chemical bridge. It triggers a cascade of events that ultimately lead to muscle contraction.
Acetylcholine, it's like the ultimate multitasker of the nervous system. But it's amazing to think that every time we move, even just a tiny bit, there's this whole intricate dance of electrical and chemical signals happening behind the scenes.
It's true. And this incredibly precise system is what allows us to move with such incredible coordination and control. But like any complex system, sometimes things can go wrong.
Right. Like what kinds of things? What happens when this communication pathway gets disrupted?
Well, damage to the motor neurons themselves, either in the brain or the spinal cord. This can lead to a whole range of problems from, you know, muscle weakness to paralysis. Think about conditions like ALS or spinal cord injuries. They directly impact the somatic nervous system and can severely limit a person's ability to move voluntarily.
That's definitely the more serious end of the spectrum. But what about conditions that specifically affect the neuromuscular junction? You mentioned myasthenia gravis earlier. What exactly is that?
So myasthenia gravis is an autoimmune disorder where the body's own immune system mistakenly attacks those acetylcholine receptors at the neuromuscular junction. And this disrupts the communication between the nerves and muscles, leading to, you know, muscle weakness and fatigue.
So it's like the immune system is throwing a wrench into the machinery, preventing those signals from getting through.
Exactly. And this can manifest in a variety of ways, from, you know, drooping eyelids and difficulty swallowing to weakness in the arms and legs.
Wow, that sounds really challenging. But are there treatments that can help people with these types of neuromuscular disorders?
Fortunately, yes. For myasthenia gravis, there are medications that can help improve muscle strength and function. And for people with spinal cord injuries, researchers are exploring some really exciting new avenues, like nerve regeneration therapies and even brain-computer interfaces that bypass the damaged nerves altogether and allow people to control prosthetic limbs with their thoughts.
That's incredible. It's like science fiction becoming reality.
It is.
It gives me so much hope for the future of treating these conditions.
It's truly remarkable what's happening in the field of neurology.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we learn about how the nervous system works, both in health and disease, the better equipped we'll be to develop new treatments and therapies that can really dramatically improve people's lives.
Well, this has been an amazing journey through the peripheral nervous system, from those tiny little receptors picking up signals from the world to the intricate communication pathways that control our movements and our internal responses. It's clear that this vast network of nerves plays a really vital role in everything we do.
It's true. The peripheral nervous system is a testament to the incredible complexity and resilience of the human body. And understanding how it works not only gives us this, you know, deeper appreciation for our own biology, but also really empowers us to take better care of ourselves and make informed decisions about our health.
Absolutely. I feel like I've gained a whole new level of respect for my own body and all the amazing things that it does, you know, without me even realizing it. So to everyone listening, keep exploring, keep learning, and never underestimate the incredible power of your own nervous system. Until next time.